The path of spiritual transformation leads to the path of ministry participation. That's what we said. That unless you allow yourself to be sent by God to do ministry, to get involved in what's broken and wrong with the world, there's a kind of a ceiling to your spiritual growth. If it's ultimately just about you and you kind of getting comfortable and feeling good about yourself, if that's what Christ is to you, then there's a ceiling on your growth. You can't connect with the heart of God until you do like God and dive into the brokenness of this world. That's what Jesus did, into the messiness, the grit and grime. Because it's in that place where you have to start depending upon God in ways perhaps you never have before. It's in that place that you truly see the heart of God. It's in that place where you come to the end of yourself, and as you reach out and wait on God to bring the resources that you need, you experience God in new ways. And really, that's what the disciples had to go through, and we talked about that last Sunday. And then this Sunday, it's precisely what happens, though, is they're pushed to a new level. Jesus takes it to another level. They've been depending upon God. They've gone out in ministry and depended upon God, but perhaps maybe they're still holding a little bit back. Perhaps they're thinking too much in their own natural kind of strength, and what can we do in our own strength? And Jesus wants to send this powerful message to say, look, you have heavenly resources at your disposal, so don't be afraid to dive in where there's need. This is what happens in the text. Disciples go to a new level of dependency upon Christ, and they experience God in a new in a powerful way. Would you open with me to the Gospel of Luke chapter 9? Gospel of Luke chapter 9, verse 10. If you don't have a Bible, raise your hand and we would love to hand one to you just so you could follow along and see what it really says. It's such a great, all these accounts of what Jesus does are just so, and Luke is such a great teller, storyteller. Luke chapter 9, verse 10. It's a very famous section, the feeding of the 5,000. All right, verse 10. On their return, the apostles told him, that's Jesus, all that they had done. And he took them and withdrew apart to a town called Bethsaida. They'd worked really hard. They were tired. They were somewhat, you know, just sort of weary and overworked. And Jesus says, come away. Let's go to this place and we'll rest. And Bethsaida is on the west shore of the Sea of Galilee. Verse 11. When the crowds learned it, they followed him. Now, the other Gospels tell us that while they're in the boat traveling, the crowds, they run around the lake to meet them when they get out of the boat, because they want to be with him. And so, he saw the crowds, Jesus said, you know what, we're really tired right now, and we don't have any time for you. We need to go rest. Is that what he says? Look in your verse. It says, and he welcomed them and spoke to them of the kingdom of God and cured those who had need of healing. He continues to do what he's been doing the whole time. He's teaching and he's healing. And apparently he got the strength from somewhere. And Matthew and Mark add that when he looked at the crowd, he had compassion on them. Luke says he welcomed them. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Verse 12. Now the day began to wear away, and the 12 came and said to him, send the crowd away to go into the surrounding villages and countryside to find lodging and get provisions, for we are here in a desolate place. And actually, what the disciples want to do here is express compassion. They're afraid that these people, thousands of people, are going to be stuck out in the middle of nowhere with nothing to eat and nowhere to stay. And so it's coming from the right place. They want to protect the people. And so they say, let's send them away so we don't all get stuck out here with no food and water and no place to stay. They have a desire to help the people. But verse 13, Jesus said to them, you give them something to eat. If you're an underliner in your Bible, underline those words. You give them something to eat. Now, I want you to pull back a second and just imagine their faces. I don't know what their faces look like. Maybe some of them said, what? You know, maybe some like Sarah when she was 90 and was told that she was going to have a baby and they laughed, you know. Some of them probably who the ones who'd been with Jesus now for a while, the longest, and had seen a lot of stuff, they probably rolled their eyes. Here we go again, right? Jesus is doing something unexpected. They all had this response. This is an incredibly important moment. And the walk of faith, just say this, the walk of your walk of faith is filled with moments like this. It's filled with moments like this. And how we respond is very important. It's the difference between living sort of the old life in your natural strength and living the supernatural life. Jesus may not use those words. You give them something, but it's something like that. And that's a critical moment. How are we going to respond? The disciples voice their usual kind of protest. They're looking at the situation from an entirely natural kind of human perspective. They said, it goes on in verse 13, we have no more than 5 loaves and 2 fish, unless we are to go and buy food for all these people. And John and Mark tell us that it would take 7 months' wages to be able to have enough food to feed all of these people. Not a small problem. Verse 14, for there were about 5,000 men and then their families with them. And he said to his disciples, have them sit down in groups of about 50 each. And they did so. And to their credit, these disciples who were just previously protesting and how are we going to do this isn't going to work. They still don't understand how it's going to happen. But Jesus says, have them sit down in groups. And they did. The disciples did. It's another important moment. They don't understand. They don't get the big picture. But they do as Jesus says, and he had them all sit down, and taking, verse 16, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven, and he said a blessing over them. Then he broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples to set before the crowd. And they all ate and were satisfied. And what was left over was picked up, 12 baskets of broken pieces. One commentator noted that in the Old Testament, when God fed the people in Israel, there was just enough for everybody. But now in the new age with Jesus Christ, there is leftover. There's abundance. It's even greater than when God fed in the past. Now I want to pull 3 things from this text that are markers that tell us about Christianity, about following Jesus Christ. There's 3 things about following Jesus Christ, about Christianity, that are very evident in the text that we've just read. The first one is this, that it's about compassion for a broken world. Following Jesus, Christianity, however you want to say it, is about compassion for a broken world. When Jesus saw the crowd, even though everybody was exhausted and they needed a rest and they were at the very end of their rope, he welcomed them because he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd and they needed help. And Jesus didn't turn away from their brokenness. He turned toward it. Just like he's done, as we've been studying all throughout the Gospel of Luke, with the lepers and with the paralytic that he forgave, and the leper he touched, he reached out and touched, and the demon-possessed that he would cast out the demons, and the sick over and over again, and he makes himself unclean. He didn't have to do that. He could heal these people from afar, but he goes and he touches them, a sign of his just deep compassion and love. Jesus over and over and over again demonstrates this level of compassion. He touches the people. He's around them. He hangs out with the so-called sinners. He eats with them when he shouldn't, and people talk about him behind his back, and he hangs out with them. And there's going to be more of this to come. When he comes to Jerusalem, he's going to look over the city of Jerusalem, and he's going to break down weeping. For this city that he loves the people, he's filled with compassion, and he wants what's best for them, and they're just broken. And then, of course, all the way to the cross, which is the greatest expression of compassion, Jesus willing to give his entire life on that cross for those who would come to him and receive his forgiveness by faith. On and on and on, Jesus is filled with compassion. Christianity is about compassion. It's about looking at a broken world and turning towards it and not away. A few months back, I heard the story, and Clark was on his way to home group, and sorry, I didn't get a chance to talk to you about this beforehand. It's going to be fun, huh? Clark was on his way to home group, and there's a guy walking along, and it looked like he didn't have any place to go, and didn't have any shoes on, and I don't know if I get the story perfectly, so I'll just make up some additional stuff, too, didn't he? he swung around, he pulled up, and he felt, he pulled up, and he rolled down his window, and he said something to the effect of, "I think I should give you my shoes," and got out of the car and took off. Now, if you know Clark and shoes, this is a big deal. Like, if you're shopping for shoes, talk to Clark. Clark knows shoes. And Clark, he took off his shoes, and this man put on the shoes, and they fit perfectly. And he brought him to home group with him, and the group prayed for him. And it was just that compassion welling up that you can't resist. And a lot of us, I think, struggle with compassion. I struggle with compassion quite a bit. We have a hard time keeping the compassion alive inside of us, don't we? We stop stopping by the side of the road. We stop being willing to sacrifice and to offer what we have for the sake of others. We have a hard time keeping the compassion alive. And I think there are lots of reasons for that. But one of the reasons that comes from this text, the reason that we have a hard, that's associated with this text, the reason we have a hard time keeping the compassion alive is that people who feel powerless to fix something stop caring. When we feel powerless to fix what's wrong in the world, we stop caring. Because it's almost like a self-protective response that we have. It's a matter of survival. We feel like if I keep caring, I'm just going to hurt. It's just going to hurt more and more, and there's nothing I can do about it. What's the point? If only there were resources available to address the needs that are in front of me. Which brings us to the second point. See, if I had the resources, if I had the resources to be able to address the problems, then I could face the reality of what's really going on in the world. I could be upfront about the brokenness, and I could have compassion because I could do something about it. Well, second point is that Christianity is about supernatural resources. That's what this text tells us. Now, I'm not sure how the bread was multiplied, and there are different views. Augustine thought that the bread was multiplied in Jesus' hands. Calvin speculated that the bread was multiplied in the disciples' hands. I would probably go with Calvin on that because I think there's a story about faith. And if it was multiplied in Jesus' hands, then they didn't have to have much faith in order to deliver it to the people, right? But it could have been something else completely. We don't know. And a lot of people tried to explain what had gone on. And many attempts have been made, crazy attempts, to explain away the supernatural element in this. One, you know, that Jesus hypnotized the people and made them think that they were full. Seems about as miraculous as just having multiplied the bread. At the end of the day, Christianity is about the supernatural. And you just can't get away from that. That it's just all over the place in the Bible. It's all over in the life of Jesus. And our fundamental core of Christianity, the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, is supernatural. And you got to come to grips with that reality. It's something that's just right there in the middle of it all. You know, one of the ways that we look at this, we think it couldn't happen because it always there's these natural laws and things always happen this way. But let's not forget that the only reason that there are natural laws is because of God created them and He sustains them daily. The only reason, you know, gravity works all the time is because God created it and He sustains it daily. And when you get that perspective, you understand that everything that happens natural law-like in our world is a result of God's creative and sustaining hand. Then you start to say, well, if God decided to bend that now and then, it's not such a big deal. I mean, thankfully, He has given us a world that is very stable. I can stand on this floor and not fall through the middle, generally speaking. Because He's accommodated Himself to us because we need that stability. We're weak creatures. We're small creatures. We need to be able to trust things. And God has made a world that we can trust. But it's only trustworthy because of Him. And so if He decides to bend the rules now and then to make a point, well, that just fits right in. Thanks for the emphasis. perfect timing. Now, not only does God provide what is needed here, but it's over and above. It's not only enough, but there's leftover. It's super supernatural. And when I look at this, when I sit with it and I think about my own life, I find a frustration comes up inside of me. And that frustration goes something like this, is why do I say I believe in supernatural, but I live so often only by the natural? Why do I do that? Why do I say that I believe in a supernatural God, but I often don't live like it? Like the disciples, they started calculating naturally how they could do this, right? How much weight, how many wages would it take, and where are we going to go and buy the food, and how are we going to hand it all out, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're just totally looking at this from a human's perspective. They haven't begun to think about the supernatural side. And we do the same. I do the same. And I feel convicted about this as I read this text. And it's not that the vision isn't bad. I mean, they want to help. The disciples' vision isn't bad. They want to help. It's just that it's too small. And that's me so often. It's not that my vision isn't bad. It's just too small. Which leads to the last point. And that is that Christianity is about it's about compassion for a broken world. It's about supernatural resources in the face of that brokenness. And then lastly, it's about faithful people. And by that I mean people filled with faith. Faith-filled people. Carl Henry, I've been rereading this little short book that he wrote called The Uneasy, 1947 he wrote this, so some of the terms mean something a little bit different than what they mean today. The Uneasy Conscience of Modern Fundamentalism, meaning really the orthodox strain of Christianity there. And he's sort of criticizing the lack of help that the Christian community is giving to all kinds of problems in the world, whatever poverty or whatever needs there are in the world. And he's sort of criticizing that. He says this, "Of all the seemingly incongruous weddings in philosophy, this is the most striking, that Christian supernaturalism, which is a matter of historical record, furnished the background and in some sense the support for the modern humanisms and idealisms." Let me unpack that. He's saying that the reason that our world does care to the extent that it does for the brokenness and the need and the poverty in the world is in large part because of the Christian influence in the world. Okay. You know, in New Orleans with the hurricane, you know, what numbers were being flashed across the television screen to say, give to these organizations if you want to help the people here? It was what, the Salvation Army and the Red Cross. Both started out of a Christian worldview. Both started because of the Gospels and how that affects somebody and what they wanted to do about it. Okay, so. So this has sort of shaped our response to the poverty and the needs of the world. And yet, he's criticizing us for taking the supernatural part out and for not relying on God to address the issues. You say you have supernatural resources. Why not apply those to the world's problems? Anyway, I don't think I even finished the quote. "In some sense, the support for modern humanism and idealism should be accused of having lost its own devotion to human well-being." Why, for a people who have been taught that there are supernatural resources available to them, why have we lost, he's saying, our devotion to helping the person in need in front of us? And why, when we do we rely on natural means so much of the time? This whole thing touches something very deep in me, and just, you know, people have often asked me, why plant a church in Albany, Berkeley area, any of the coasts, you know, where, you know, like in our area, church attendance is something like 2%. You know, why plant a church in that kind of a place? And part of it, I think there's a lot of motives and a lot of stuff going on, but part of it is to see how big God is, right? We know that churches can be started in the suburban Midwest where there's kind of an affinity already and there's this desire. We know that. But what about the coastal cities? What about places like where we are, where, you know, it's 2% church attendance? Wow, if God could do that, we would see God in a new way. We would see the power of God right in front of us. That's the longing and the desire to see. Remember what I said, that you can only grow so far unless you start to reach out. And it's in that place where you have to depend on God that you begin to see God in new ways. You understand His power. And you know Him more. And you worship Him more. When I was a kid, we'd play football in the street all the time. And there was one phrase that we always use is, go long. What that meant is if you were the quarterback, you'd tell one of the other guys on your team, go long, right? And so you'd say hike, and the kid would go as far as he could, and you would just heave the ball as far as you possibly could. And the other kid would be running out there, and if they were there, you know, they would catch it, and they'd be already close to the end zone and make a touchdown, and that drive is over, done. Just in one fell swoop, you're all done. And sometimes if you didn't trust the quarterback enough, you'd kind of go sort of long, but you wouldn't really run all the way out because you'd be afraid that he wouldn't be able to throw it that far. But he said go long, and so he would just heave the football as hard as he could, and you'd be standing there and the football would go flying over the top of you because you didn't go long. Jesus is holding this loaf, these loaves and these five fishes, and he's saying to the disciples, go long. So often what we do, I think, with Christ is he says go long, and we take about two steps out, you know, and we turn. And he's forced to do the Brett Favre kind of shovel pass because we're just right there. And he says, no, go long. I mean long. Run. Do you know how far I can throw? I want to show you how far I can throw. Go long. He wants us to run far and see how big he is. See what he can do with our measly two fish and five loaves. It's amazing what he can do. Do we believe it? That's the question. I'm guessing that for all of us this morning, if we're honest, when we leave our house in the morning, we see needs in our neighbors. And when we get on the bus or drive in our cars, we see needs in the people around us. We see brokenness, we see poverty, spiritual need. We see all of this around us. And we feel a lot of times like we've only got two fish and five loaves and it's not enough. It's not enough for the brokenness around us. And Jesus is saying to us this morning, you take those two loaves and those five fish that you have, excuse me, other way around, two fish and five loaves, and bring them to me. And let me multiply what you have to address the needs in front of you. That's what Christ is calling us to, that kind of faith. Christianity is about faith-filled people who will take the little that they have, the gifting or the resources or the time or whatever it is that they have, and will bring it to Christ and say, I know it's only this, but you have it and you multiply it. And send me out then to bring it to the people who are in need around me. Of course, all this starts with prayer. We've been talking about this over and over again. Right now, we're just asking you to pray for a few people around you, whether it be at work or in your neighborhood, just pray that God would bless them. And be open to God saying, okay, you're the answer to my prayer, to your prayer. This is what I want you to do. And maybe it's just two fish and five loaves, but take it and see what God will do with it. This morning as we come to the table, I want you to try and think about what you're holding and how it's inadequate to the needs before you. Maybe you're facing some challenges with respect to your family or raising kids. Maybe, like I said, you've got a heart for your neighbors and you feel incapable of breaking through. You've got a willingness, but you seem to not be able to get anywhere with it. Maybe when you think of ministry or what God has called you to do in ministry, you feel that sense of inadequacy, that there's not enough, you don't have enough to make it happen. Whatever it is, it could be any number of things. And as we pray before communion, maybe you need just to ask God, what are my 2 fish and 5 loaves? What do I have to offer? And then as we come forward to take communion, you bring whatever that is forward to the altar and you give it to Jesus Christ. You say, it's not enough, but in your supernatural power, you can make it enough. You can make it enough to address the needs before me. And as you come to this table and you take the bread and you take the cup, you give that to Christ. And then I guess you go long, right? You let him send you out in ministry to serve, to sacrifice, to give, to love the people around you with the little that you have, trusting that Christ can take the little bit that you have and multiply it and make it enough. He can make it enough. And they picked up 12 baskets afterwards. Jesus, we come to you this morning, and some of us are in that spot where we're still very much focused on ourselves and what Christianity can do for us. And that is an important place to be. You do love us individually, and you want to transform us and renew us, heal our brokenness. You want to bring us into communion with yourself, the living God. And that's a beautiful part of this walk. And so we celebrate that. Some of us this morning are on that verge that we really need to, in order to continue to grow, we need to start stepping out and serving others. We need to start being willing to sacrifice for others. We need to start giving more than we're receiving so that we can begin to take on the heart of Christ. And that call that you're placing upon us is a scary one, because we look at ourselves and our time and our resources and our giftedness or lack of all of those, and we feel that it's futile. How can we address the needs, the thousands of needs that are before us? And it's true, we can't in our human strength address the needs that are before us.